Hi, good morning. Wait, as it loads, it's a little bit of a big file, probably just because of the graphics more than anything. So exactly, the title of my presentation is Using an Experimental Pretest to Examine the Impact of Question Wording Changes on a National Survey Measuring College Student Health. And so a little bit like Megan, the statistics that I'm going to go over with you guys today are actually very, very basic, and it's really more of a methodology issue on how do you start to evaluate the changes that are made when you, or the statistical differences that might exist when you begin changing the way that you ask questions on national surveys or large-scale surveys. So before I get started, I do want to present a little bit of a disclosure to you. I get a little bit tripped up about whether this is commercial or not, but I feel that I need to just go ahead and disclose it, that I did serve as a consultant for the American College Health Association, which is the author of this survey. So, okay. So just to give you a little bit of a background, the American College Health Association's National College Health Assessment, or from now on I'll refer to it as the NCHA, is a very large-scale survey that asks about 50 questions that measures about 300 variables about college student health. And so there are six primary areas about which the survey asks college students today. And those are health, health education and safety, alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use, sexual health, mental and physical health, impediments to academic performance, so those things that students may be experiencing that cause them to get lower grades on tests and quizzes and in classes in general, and then just very basic demographic characteristics. And so the demographics come at the end of the survey, which some people have mixed feelings on where they should go. Should they go at the beginning or should they go at the end? But the survey asks them at the end. The survey started right around the year 2000, and it stemmed from a 1995 study from the CDC, which was the National Collegiate Youth Risk Behavior Survey. And so that's very similar to the YRBS, if you've heard of it, from the CDC. So this stemmed from that. We started to really realize, especially as learning outcome measures became important on college campuses, that these types of health data were really important. So you can see here the increase in participation. These are the number of students who participated in data collection efforts from spring 2000 through spring 2007. You can see that right between around 2003 and 2004 that there did become a big jump. And that was because, probably not surprising, the survey became available online. And so once the data collection became available over the internet and schools could choose to either use paper surveys or online surveys, a lot more schools decided to participate. It was a little bit more cost effective, and students weren't being bombarded so much with online surveys back then. So as is the case with a lot of national surveys, large-scale surveys, the more people who participated, the more feedback there was. And the more feedback there was, the more that the American College Health Association realized that they probably needed to start changing their survey questions or maybe making some modifications. And so the revision to the national survey began in December 2005 as a result of many feedback mechanisms. So it came from institutions, a lot of divisions of student affairs and faculty members coming and saying, hey, this question might not be worded correctly. So for example, the question on the survey that asked about sexual orientation and said, what is your sexual orientation, also included transgender, which we know isn't sexual orientation. That's gender identity. And so that was just a complete mistake on the part of the survey in the beginning. So some things like that, just very easy changes. They also kind of went through and looked at the literature, how things were being measured and conceptualized, and also a lot of trends were going on college campuses. They were seeing a lot of increase on things like prescription drug abuse or mental health challenges. And so the rest of my presentation is going to focus a lot on mental health because that section of the survey was dramatically expanded. So the big kind of things that happened on the survey were that items were removed, items were added, and then items were revised. And so you can see up here that some of the common revisions were things like STEM rewording, clarification of response instructions. We found that maybe it wasn't so clear as to how questions were being asked or how people should respond. Modification of response options, and modification of recall time period. And so this became an issue because one of the ways that the questions were asked on the original survey was, within the last school year, how many times or have you experienced? And what they realized is that within the last school year, depending on whether or not you surveyed your students in, let's say, February versus May, that could actually be anywhere from maybe a 6-month time recall period to a 9-month recall time period. And that wasn't really necessarily consistent. So some of the things that guided the survey revisions, as I was talking about, were really looking at some characteristics of reliable and valid survey items. The goal, ultimately, was to make the survey more reliable and more valid. you know, to make sure that we were measuring things more consistently and that we were really measuring what we said we were measuring. And so these, you can look here, and I'm not going to read through them. You guys can certainly read through these. But essentially, it's very intuitive. I think when you think about asking questions of people on surveys or even in general in your everyday conversation, you want to make sure that the question is clear, that it's being understood the same way by everyone who's reading it, that the adequate answer needs to be understood, and that ultimately that students are willing to provide those answers. Now, that always is an issue when anytime we're measuring anything, especially with college students and asking them about their alcohol use and their sexual behaviors and their mental health. We know that there's social desirability bias, but ultimately, these survey data are some of the only data we have to measure these things. So the purpose of this study was twofold, and it was to examine how the modifications to the items on the original survey changed patterns of student responses to those items. So I'll give you some examples of what changes were made, and then how we went about analyzing the differences that resulted from those changes. And also to examine evidence of preliminary reliability and validity in this sample. So ultimately, we made these changes and we thought, okay, our goal here is to create a more reliable and valid survey instrument. And we did notice that there were some statistically significant differences in the way students responded to questions. But were we really getting closer to these constructs that we wanted to get at or not? So just to kind of give you a little bit more of an overview, The original ACHA asked 5 questions that collected 16 variables worth of information on student mental health. So as you can imagine, with everything that had happened over the last few years with Virginia Tech and with just a lot of the increase of student distress in general, the survey really noted that we really needed to expand on things like help seeking, the diagnosis and treatment with a variety of mental health conditions and things like that. And so you can see there was a dramatic expansion that now the revised survey has 8 questions that collects 44 variables on student mental health. So that's a big difference. So this is an example of an item that was changed, and I'll go ahead and pull this up for you. So on the NQ is the new survey, and the Q is the original survey. So just anytime you see N, that means it's the revised survey. Anytime you don't see that, it's the original. So the original survey asked, within the last school year, how many times have you never, 1 to 2 times, 3 to 4 times, 5 to 6 times, you can see there. And you can see all the different constructs that we're trying to measure. Ultimately, the first 5 there were measures of a negative affect scale, just kind of getting at what's the level of negative affect that students experienced over the last year. And so you can see on the new survey, it was have you ever, and then never, not in the last 12 months, in the last 12 months, in the last 30 days, and in the last 2 weeks. There are a lot of the same items here, but the reason that this stem changed is students told us, we have no idea. You know, 7 times, 5 times, you know, we know that in general we may have felt this way for a little while or we felt that way in the last month, but, you know, we don't really know, we can't really quantify for you the difference between 3 to 4 times or 5 to 6 times. Things like suicide or attempting suicide or seriously considering suicide were more emotional events than they could, but so they asked us to kind of move it this way. So that's what we did. We also added some other things that the literature told us were important. Felt very lonely, felt overwhelming anxiety, overwhelming anger, and then some self-harm behaviors you can see here. In addition, we also changed the way that we were asking, and I use prevalence here lightly, but you can see here that the old way on the original survey, Q4748, was within the last school year, have you had any of the following? It didn't ask about diagnosis or treatment. It just said, hey, have you had this? On the revised survey, we said, in the last 12 months, have you been diagnosed or treated by a professional for any of the following? And then you can see all the different response options that the students could have. So we realized when we asked this question, this was really ambiguous. What does it mean to have something? I mean, you know, and so you can see how we really tried to streamline and really get more valid in the way that we were asking the students these questions. So you can see here, and also the only mental health things that we asked about on the original survey were anorexia, anxiety, bulimia, depression, and substance abuse. So that wasn't really a whole lot. So you can see all the things that were added on the new survey, which was great. And like I said, we were really trying to get at that construct of diagnosis and or treatment to kind of understand, you know, what we're dealing with on college campuses. So For those of you who have never heard of a pretest of a survey, an experimental pretest is when you basically have a dress rehearsal of a survey among its population, and it can really encompass a range of activities, including evaluating individual questions, the questionnaire as a whole, things like this. An experimental field pretest is exactly pretty much what it sounds like. It's where you do a split sample. You get your pretest sample, and then you randomize students in that sample to either receive the original survey or the revised survey, so that you can really begin to evaluate how changing the questions actually changes patterns of student responses. And so that's what we decided to do, because what we found is, you know, you guys all see those charts, you know, when you have the charts showing the prevalence of things, and then you have that little blip, and there's that little footnote that says, survey measurement changed. And it doesn't really tell you anything about whether or not any changes you observed were changes in prevalence or changes in what was going on, or if it really was a change just due to the fact that the survey had changed. So that's what we wanted to understand. How does the survey change the way that responses change? So this goes through just the whole selection process of how we selected schools. Ultimately, PSI is post-secondary institution. And so ultimately, 7 post-secondary institutions participated in this, and they enrolled about 200,000 students. Ultimately, about 35,000 students were invited to participate in both in each sample. So I'll show you that really quickly. So what that means is that from each school that participated, they came to us and we said, okay, this looks great. And then we took that sample and said, let's say, just because that's where I work, Towson University came and said, we want to survey our students and participate in this effort. Then I would have taken half of the sample that they gave us and online, we did all of this online, and I would have given the revised survey to half of the students and the original survey to half of the students. With the idea being that because we randomized, the samples were equitable or equivalent, and that any differences that we were seeing was differences in measurement. Okay, so we controlled as much as we could to make sure that the randomization and the differences were really instrumentation differences. So you can see here, I mean, this is a testament to randomization. Our samples were almost identical across. Female gender breakdown, racial breakdown, age breakdown, none of these were statistically significant at all, so there were no statistically significant differences in our samples, except the international students. And this was really interesting because we have done this a few different times on a few different iterations, and we thought, oh, this really is different based on international students. But what we also learned is that we flipped from asking yes. So on the original survey, it said, are you an international student? And the first response option was yes, and then no. On the revised survey, it was no, then yes. And we found that for some reason, we keep seeing the statistically significant difference in international students. And we don't really know if that's true or not. So it's very, very interesting. So anyway, research questions, what differences exist? And the hypothesis was that we would see statistically significant differences in patterns. We changed the questions. Our goal was to see differences and get them more defined. So you can see here, all of these ones with the asterisks here felt things were hopeless, felt exhausted, felt very sad, etc. Those were all, because of the large sample size, we had tremendous power. So we could detect even the smallest of differences. And so to support the hypothesis, I was looking with anything with an effect size of 0.1 or greater. That was at least a small effect size. And that was with a phi coefficient. And so, because what I did is I collapsed everything down to make them as equitable comparisons as possible. So within the last year or not within the last year, have you experienced this? And you can see here that the revised survey, the prevalence had really gone down a little bit on these things. All of them were statistically significant except for attempted suicide. We'll go through here really quickly. And again, all of these were statistically significant, but none of these differences in prevalences were actually practically significant. So you can see all of this here. And I have tables here for you as well. This is a lot to go through, and you can actually see the numbers, see the phi coefficients and all, and I have handouts for anybody who's interested. So I'll kind of go through, we're running out of time a little bit here. But the other thing that I wanted to do was look at and see if the measurement that we were getting at, when we changed this, if it became more similar to other measures that were out there. And so I compared all of the prevalence estimates to those of the National Comorbidity Study Replication, which looked at past year prevalence of these conditions. And my hypothesis was that the revised survey would be closer. We'll go through that real quick. And here you can see that the we really did get to get a little bit more close to those prevalence estimates. And again, I have all of this on tables for you, and you can look at it across age groups and genders and things like that. I know I'm going through very quickly, and I apologize for that. So ultimately, the big thing here is that we have to be very cognizant of any time we change survey measurement, we really have to be sure to understand that we also can change the prevalence estimates and that there might be no differences other than the way that we're asking questions. And so that we have to be very careful any time we compare across surveys or even within surveys. And so there are multiple limitations, and I will be more than happy to answer any questions about those with you. But I do want to go ahead and wrap up. And so I'll just pull all these up and you can look here. And we can, and like I said, I can answer any questions later after all the presentations are done. Okay, so thank you very much.